This is Free Speech Radio News for Friday, the 2nd of May, 2008. From Pacifica Station KPFK in LA, I'm Aura Bogado. On today's newscast,
it's not the time to ask American families who are already paying more in the checkout line to pay more in subsidies for wealthy farmers.
We'll take a look at the politics behind the farm bill.
We could use that $5 billion that's going to these huge growers that are already making record profits for something, you know, very different and urgently needed.
We'll go to Argentina, where a human rights activist is kidnapped and released. And we'll hear about immigration and labor demonstrations on May Day.
We want to send a message to the entire world to end the harassment and persecution of immigrant communities by federal agencies and local police.
It's not going to end until we get people in the streets exactly like happened at the end of the Vietnam War to end this thing.
Those stories and more after the headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with the headlines. A new U.S. airstrike on Somalia has reportedly killed a man believed to be an al-Qaeda commander in the volatile African nation. The missiles dropped on the home of Adin Hashi Iro also killed 24 other people who were either in his house or in nearby buildings. The Al-Shabaab militia, the armed faction of the Islamic Courts Union, has vowed revenge and has warned U.S. citizens to stay out of Somalia. In other news from Africa, Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission today ended more than a month of speculation by releasing the official results of the disputed presidential election. Davidson Makonga reports.
The official results show that Zimbabwe's opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai received more votes than incumbent Robert Mugabe, but failed to reach a required 50% majority needed to avoid a runoff. Tsvangirai's party, the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, called the official results scandalous daylight robbery. Tsvangirai won just under 48%, while the long-ruling president Robert Mugabe claimed 43%. Former Finance Minister Simba Makoni, who ran as an independent candidate, came away with a little over 8%. The MDC accused the Electoral Commission of announcing the results without independent verification. Election official Morgan Komich said the electoral board abandoned the process midway. No date has been set for the presidential runoff, but analysts warn that Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party and its loyalists could launch a bloody crackdown to keep opposition supporters away from the polls. The MDC says that 22 of its supporters have been killed since the disputed March 29 election. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Davidson Makonga in Cape Town, South Africa.
Pakistani judges who were fired by President Pervez Musharraf last year could return to their positions later this month under the terms of an agreement negotiated by the opposition coalition parties. Musharraf removed around 60 judges from their posts after declaring emergency rule last November. The resolution to reinstate the judges must first pass through the National Assembly, where Musharraf loyalists have threatened to block it. The Mexican government appears to have accepted an offer to hold talks with the country's EPR guerrilla group, although the government's list of conditions for the talks could end up keeping the rebels from coming to the table. Vladimir Flores has more from Oaxaca.
Mexico's interior minister said that the Popular Revolutionary Army, or EPR, must first lay down its arms before the government will meet to negotiate an end to the long-running insurgency. The guerrilla group offered a truce earlier this week in exchange for proof that two of its leaders who disappeared last May in Oaxaca City are alive. The EPR rebels requested a handful of recognized social figures to act as intermediaries. Among them is Samuel Ruiz, the former bishop of San Cristobal de las Casas, Chiapas, who in 1995 mediated talks between the federal government and the Zapatista Army of National Liberation. Those named in the EPR request have agreed to act as intermediaries, but say the government's position is unclear as it does not recognize them as mediators, but rather as, quote, social witnesses. The guerrilla group has yet to respond to the government's counterproposal. For FSRN, I am Vladimir Flores in Oaxaca City.
A coalition of 50 local, state, and national organizations today launched a 130-mile march from Tucson to Phoenix to draw attention to what they say is a surge in hate crimes, racial profiling, and illegal detentions of Latino U.S. citizens in Maricopa County, Arizona. The county sheriff, Joe Arpaio, has made a name for himself nationally for policies such as tent city detention camps, chain gangs for male, female, and juvenile inmates, and the creation of a deputized posse of armed private citizens to enforce rules ranging from traffic violations to federal immigration laws. The mayor of Phoenix, the largest city in Maricopa County, sent a letter last month to the attorney general to request that federal authorities investigate what he calls a, quote, pattern and practice of conduct that includes discriminatory harassment, improper stops, searches, and arrests. The march that began today in Tucson will cover an average of 13 miles a day until it arrives in Phoenix on May 11th. And finally, Al Jazeera cameraman Sami Al-Haj has been released from Guantanamo Bay after 6.5 years of detention without charge. Al-Haj arrived in his home country of Sudan early this morning, where he was met by his wife and son. The U.S. military denied it had released Al-Haj, calling the move a detainee transfer to the Sudanese government. Al-Haj arrived with two other former Guantanamo detainees. All three were freed by Sudanese authorities. Those are the headlines. I'm Shannon Young.
As consumers battle the rising cost of food, lawmakers in Congress battle the White House and each other over the Farm Bill. The legislation focuses on massive agribusiness and does little to address the needs of everyday consumers. As FSRN's Karen Miller reports from the Capitol, the bill decides how much farmers are paid, how much food costs, and who has access to nutritious food.
After five extensions that have lasted 7 months, members of Congress say they are finally close to having what they need to complete the $300 billion Farm Bill, save one major obstacle, the president.
Americans are concerned about rising food prices. Unfortunately, Congress is considering a massive, bloated Farm Bill that would do little to solve the problem.
Yesterday, members of the Senate Agriculture Committee met with the president in a late-night meeting that ran into the morning hours. They're trying to address two of the Bush administration's top concerns: the cost of the bill, which the Bush administration says is $18 billion over budget, and reform that would end subsidies for large growers. President Bush.
It's not the time to ask American families who are already paying more in the checkout line to pay more in subsidies for wealthy farmers.
Daniel Imhoff is the author of Food Fight, the Citizen's Guide to a Food and Farm Bill. He says historically, taxpayers have been footing the bill.
We have to stop these policies of the late 20th century, where we are just, you know, boosting up this industrial, huge mega farm complex. And, you know, people are right to say, we could use that $5 billion that's going to these huge growers that are already making record profits for something, you know, very different and urgently needed.
But some feel there are other reasons why the president might be dragging his feet and touting the size and scope of the bill. Since there is a Democratic-led Congress, the stakes are particularly high for those Democrats who are seeking re-election. Jay Caldwell from the Center for American Progress.
Potentially, it could put the Democrats in a tight position in terms of leadership in Congress, putting forward a bill that, you know, the president used the term bloated. You know, that kind of characterization of the bill could come back to haunt some of the Democratic candidates.
For Republicans coming out against the bill, it could be used for their benefit in upcoming elections as well. Today, presidential candidate John McCain says he does not support the bill. Imhoff says Republicans can use the bill to shore up a fiscally conservative credo by saying cut the subsidies.
When you look at the Farm Bill politics, you definitely have to say that many things are not as they seem. And, you know, someone can take a position under cover of safety knowing that, you know, a certain bill isn't going to pass, but then they can go back to their constituency and say, well, I stood up for X, Y, or Z.
Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia is on the Senate Agriculture Committee and was in the meeting with the president. He says there's still work to be done.
The president is not familiar with all the details, but philosophically, obviously he's got some issues he wants us to address.
Lawmakers will be working on the bill through the weekend and have asked for another two-week extension. President Bush issued another veto threat today. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Karen Miller.
West Coast dock workers from San Diego to Seattle walked off the job Thursday to protest the war in Iraq and to commemorate May Day. The decision, made by the leaders of the International Longshoremen and Warehouse Union, or ILWU, led to the shutdown of 29 ports in California, Oregon, and Washington. The West Coast Employers Association of Ship Owners has threatened court action against the union leaders. The dramatic walk-off is the first time in decades that organized labor has completely halted operations to protest a war. Joshua Emerson Smith reports from San Francisco, where longshoremen joined thousands of other May Day protesters calling for an end to the war in Iraq.
May Day, the internationally renowned holiday celebrating workers' rights, is not recognized by the United States government. But in recent years, immigrant rights groups have fought hard to preserve the tradition so widely celebrated in Mexico and South America. This May 1st was no different, with demonstrations demanding amnesty for immigrant workers in LA, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and throughout the country. However, this year, organized labor took a cue from the immigrant rights movement. Thousands of dock workers protesting the Iraq War walked off the job Thursday, leaving ships and truck drivers idle at ports up and down the West Coast. Instead of loading cargo, longshoremen and union leaders organized May Day protests, calling for a national no peace, no work holiday. Richard Cavalier, president of the ILWU Dock Workers Union Local 24, says the American people can't rely on Congress to end wars in the Middle East.
It's not going to end until we get people in the streets, exactly like happened at the end of the Vietnam War, to end this thing. This war is like all wars. It kills the sons and daughters of workers. George Bush's daughters get married in the White House, and ours get buried in Iraq.
When the International Longshoremen and Warehouse Union, ILWU, announced their walk-off, they called on unions and labor forces from around the country to join in their No Peace, No Work holiday. Support was spotty. Vermont AFL-CIO, the Puerto Rican Teachers Federation, the California Teachers Union, and the City University of New York Faculty and Staff Union were among those pledging support. But Michael Eisinger, the National Coordinator for U.S. Labor Against the War, surprised supporters with a message of solidarity from abroad. Iraqi longshoremen in two major ports refused to work this May Day, sending a message of gratitude to dock workers in California.
Dear brothers and sisters of ILWU in California, the pro-occupation government has been attempting to intervene into the workers' affairs by imposing a single government-certified labor union. Furthermore, it has been promoting privatization and an oil and gas law to use the occupation against the interests of the workers. We, the port workers, view that our interests are inseparable from the interests of workers in Iraq and the world.
The ILWU said 10,000 workers joined the anti-war protest, motivated in part by the belief that big shipping companies profit from the war. Steve Getzig, spokesperson for the employers group the Pacific Maritime Association, said the walk-off was a power play by union leaders.
These tactics, slowdowns, work stoppages, are things that the union has done in the past to leverage negotiations. And they made a commitment to us and to the public that they would avoid disruptions during our current contract negotiations.
The show of force by the union comes 2 months before their contract expires with the International Pacific Maritime Association, which represents port operators and large shippers, many of them foreign-owned. Prior to the May Day demonstration, an arbitrator ruled that the walk-off would violate union contract. The ILWU has said as long as their workers remain united, they fear no retribution. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Joshua Emerson Smith.
International Workers' Day demonstrations took place around the world and across the U.S. yesterday. An estimated 20,000 people took to the streets in L.A., a much lower turnout than last year that some say is a direct result of the L.A. Police Department's violent attack on demonstrators and the media at MacArthur Park last year. This year, more men and fewer families made up the roughly 5,000 peaceful march participants who gathered at the park yesterday. Jose Portillo was one of this year's participants.
Estamos protestando.
We're protesting over unjust immigration policies. And to make it clear that we're contributing to this country's economy. And we can see now that the economy is doing badly. And it's because so many working compañeros are being deported. It's one of the signs that this country is falling into a depression.
Depresión directamente.
Roberto Cabrales of Communities for a Better Environment said that the public discourse on immigrant labor turns frosty when the political and economic climate shifts.
It's messed up, you know, because only when they need immigrant workers, they'll open the doors to us. But then when there's a problem socially like war, it's now shifted to try to convince people that immigrants are a problem to this country, and it's not true. We're actually a big contribution to the economic infrastructure of the United States.
Thanks to Norma Martinez, Fernando Velasquez, and Matilde Lerich for contributing to this story. In Oakland, people linked the labor movement and justice for immigrants for the third year in a row, celebrating May Day with an immigrant rights march across the city. Elena Botkin-Levy has more.
Claudia Reyes was one of hundreds of people in Oakland that celebrated May Day yesterday with a march and rally for immigrants' rights.
We're marching to stop the race, to stop the family separation. Our demand is to put money into education, to services, not to the war.
Reyes is part of Mujeres Unidas y Activas, one of the 10 organizations that made up the coalition Oakland Sin Fronteras, Oakland Without Borders. A list of 5 demands came from the coalition.
We want to send a message to the entire world, to the community of Oakland, to end the harassment and persecution of immigrant communities by federal agencies and local police. More money for services, not war.
Ornel Malenes from Anak Bayan, another member of the coalition.
We also want to stop the uprooting and displacement of third world communities. Halt the use of no match letters to intimidate workers, organizing efforts. As well as hold our local elected officials accountable to support immigrant rights.
Since 2006, when thousands of migrants and their supporters took to the streets across the U.S., May Day has linked immigrants' rights with workers' rights. In the context of ongoing attacks, criminalization, and raids on immigrant communities, many came out this Thursday to share their stories, including Luz, a hotel worker in California.
Nos quitaron nuestro trabajo.
They kicked us out of our jobs, they fired us, and if that wasn't enough, they turned immigration on us. It was so bad that I had to move out of my house with my family because immigration had come after us.
In an election year when all 3 main presidential candidates support the construction of a fence along the U.S.-Mexico border, speakers stressed the critical need to highlight and link immigrant rights with other movements for justice. This is Elena Botkin-Levy, reporting for Free Speech Radio News.
For archives of this or any other newscast or documentary, you can visit our website at fsrn.org. You can also email us at comments@fsrn.org. That's comments@fsrn.org. A human rights activist was kidnapped in Argentina this week. His disappearance prompted an intense manhunt and concern from rights groups. This is the third case in as many years of a human rights witness going missing since Argentina opened up dirty war trials investigating rights violations. FSRN's Marie Trigona reports from Buenos Aires.
Just hours after his disappearance, the government launched a massive manhunt and human rights groups a media campaign for information on the whereabouts of the human rights activist, Juan Puthod, who survived the terror inside several clandestine detention centers during the dictatorship, was kidnapped and later released. During his 28-hour disappearance, his captors blindfolded him, beat him, and threatened him to stop participating in the trials against former military officers for crimes they committed. At a press conference yesterday, Puthoud gave details of his kidnapping.
One of the things my kidnappers told me was clear. They said, "Buddy, you don't understand that we still have your life in our hands. Even after 32 years, your life still belongs to us. We decide when you live and die. You haven't understood the messages we've sent to you."
President Cristina Kirchner and Buenos Aires Governor Daniel Scioli expressed immediate concern over Puthoud's disappearance. Hundreds of police flooded the Buenos Aires province looking for traces of the victim. Puthoud was found just blocks from offices dedicated to investigating crimes committed during the nation's bloody military dictatorship.
The disappearance of a key witness in the investigations into violations of human rights, I hope that it's only temporary. From the bottom of our hearts, we are very worried.
Juan Puthoud was set to testify in several high-profile trials involving military personnel who served during Argentina's so-called dirty war. His kidnapping sent a chilling reminder of the crimes committed during the 1976-83 military dictatorship. Unlike the previous case of Julio Lopez, who went missing September 18, 2006, police reacted quickly. Sarah Cobacho, mother of Plaza de Mayo and provincial human rights secretary, warned that leftovers from the military dictatorship could be behind Puthoud's disappearance.
Forced disappearance means pain, trauma, and open wounds. Returning to kidnappings with the kidnapping of Juan, even though it was brief, doesn't make it less traumatic. When someone goes disappeared, we already have the case of Julio Lopez. The perpetrators know that the disappearance of someone is the most traumatic act possible.
Relatives and rights activists worry Puthoud was kidnapped in order to silence him and other witnesses testifying in human rights cases. More than 200 former military personnel and members of the military government have been accused of human rights crimes and are now awaiting trial. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona in Buenos Aires.
Representatives from the Achuar people of Peru, together with environmental experts and supporters, addressed Occidental Petroleum's shareholders this morning in Los Angeles. They're demanding the company pay for cleanup after 28 years of toxic pollution due to oil drilling, which they say has poisoned their community and environment. Dan Fritz files this report from KPFK in L.A.
For 28 years, Occidental Petroleum made a fortune pumping more than a quarter of the oil out of what is known on oil maps as Block 1AB. According to the indigenous Achuar people, this once pristine area of the Amazon rainforest is now slowly dying. Achuar leader Henderson Renfiegel says the native plants used for food and medicine, animals, and the people in this region are suffering due to Oxy's negligence. Renfiegel arrived in Los Angeles this week to participate in actions meant to bring attention to his people's situation.
We come here today because of what Occidental Petroleum did over the course of 30 years, all of the damages they caused in our territory in the Peruvian Amazon. They contaminated the sources of life, which are the rivers and the forests. We come today here to demand that Occidental Petroleum clean up after themselves. We're demanding an immediate environmental remediation and compensation for Occidental Petroleum's devastation of our territory. We are suffering directly from the toxic production waters that Occidental Petroleum dumped over the course of 30 years into our rivers, into our waterways, into the streams. These toxic production waters cause severe damage to human health, from skin to the stomach. We are suffering with cancer from all of the toxic wastewater this company has dumped. Yes, there have been deaths registered. The government has recognized that our people are sick from the toxic production waters. They've registered high lead and cadmium poisoning in our blood and in our stomachs.
The Achuar sued the Los Angeles-based Oxy last year in California's Supreme Court. The judge found the case outside his jurisdiction, and now Amazon Watch, another plaintiff in the suit, and the Achuar are deciding whether to pursue the case higher in U.S. courts or Peruvian courts. For the meantime, They are seeking justice in the court of public opinion by continuing to stage actions, including a cleanup operation on Wednesday outside of Oxy's headquarters in Los Angeles. Atossi Soltani, executive director of Amazon Watch, wants to keep the press on Oxy's official story.
Occidental Petroleum, in their public statements, say several things. They say that they do not deny the practice of dumping formation waters into the rivers and streams. They do not deny they did not install reinjection systems or line their pits. The toxic waste pits and the pollution in the rivers and all of that is not anything that they deny. What they deny is that they actually cause health problems. They say basically there's no scientific studies to show that there are health concerns.
Earth Rights International funded a study into Oxy's drilling practices in Block 1AB and found an average of 850,000 barrels of toxic oil byproduct were dumped into rivers and streams used by the Atchuar for bathing, drinking, and fishing.
There are scientific studies. In fact, the Peruvian government Ministry of Health did a study that showed the majority of the Atchuar children had elevated levels of cadmium and lead in their bloodstream.
Oxy spokesperson Richard Klein said the Earth Rights report was, quote, inflammatory misstatements, unfounded allegations, and unsupported conclusions, and failed to provide basic information that would help determine whether oil operations contributed to the alleged environmental and health problems.
Basically, Oxy says, we sold that operation. So with that asset, we also sold our liabilities.
Oxy pumped 26% of Peru's historic oil production from Block 1AB before selling the declining field to Argentina's Pluspetrol in 2000. Amazon Watch says after intense pressure from the Atchuar people and their international supporters, Pluspetrol agreed in 2006 to upgrade its technology and begin re-injecting the toxic wastewater back into the ground and to clean up any contamination caused by the company.
The lawsuit that the Atchuar have brought against Occidental Petroleum is not just for liabilities, it's for personal damages. They cannot pass on liabilities that include suffering of people, death, and disease when they pass on their assets.
Today's shareholder meeting was closed to the public, but a handful of Atchuar leaders entered to plead their case. Supporters, including celebrity activist Daryl Hannah, were there to push for the Atchuar people's cause, despite their legal limbo. From KPFK in Los Angeles, and with help from Norma Martinez, Matilda Lerich, and Kelly Barnes from the People Without Borders Collective, I'm Dan Fritz.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News, which is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. You can send us your feedback. Just drop us an email to comments@fsrn.org. That's comments@fsrn.org. We're sad to announce that it's Taina Gysi's last day today. Taina has been our assistant editor working from Cape Town, South Africa since December 2006. We wish him the very best of luck in his new position as Africa Regional Editor for Interpress Service. Today's newscast was produced by Taina Gysi and Monica Lopez. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Our Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell. And our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Eric Klein and Rose Katapchi. From KPFK in L.A., I'm Aura Bogado. Espero que sea lo mejor para mí.